defeating the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who in many instances have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Have you seen Sorry to Bother You?
Yeah.
I've been trying to get Cam to watch that for like a year, but it's never lined up.
Yeah, Boots Riley, man. Boots Riley rules. His hip-hop shit's great, too.
True.
Yeah.
You Better Run. It's a song by The Coup where it's like, we got the guillotine, you better run.
Yeah, that was like their big popular one.
Or Kill Your Landlord.
Yeah. They also had a song called My Favorite Mutiny, which is all about the civil rights movement. Shit, it's great. Yeah, it's a great tune.
I like that Kill Your Landlord.
Oh. Yeah. That's yeah. Good. There's the Dead Kennedys song, Lynch Your Landlord. Love that shit. Fuck landlords. If you're listening to this and you're
fuck
a landlord,
landlord,
fuck you specifically.
Did you see that news about the landlord suing the city? Did you hear about this?
A specific one, because I know that one was dropped.
No, a group of landlords.
Yeah, they were suing the city over the registry.
Yeah,
right?
And Fabio's like,
lost?
The amount of money that they've raised would have just paid for like the thing that they're fighting against. But
yeah,
it's because they don't want their properties inspected.
That's the entire reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with money, because it's like $300 a year or something.
It's going to cost them a lot more to have their properties inspected and to have less students crammed into a kitchen with a mattress on the ground next to a stove.
I've been trying to go see this apartment that's been advertised on Marketplace, but they won't respond to me because they know what's up. But it's a one bedroom, one bath apartment. I'm doing dick fingers when I say that. But it's like they had this like single like child's bed in the kitchen. There was no stove. The sink was like a foot by a foot and a half. It was one of those little tiny skinny
ones. One plate size.
Yeah, like you can't even fit a fucking plate into it. The fridge was a mini fridge. And the bathroom was around the corner. There was no closet. What? It was just literally like a bathroom and a kitchen with a bed in it.
No.
It was $950 a month.
Are you
in the West End?
Fucking kidding me?
Yeah. And I was trying to go see it because my plan was to go in and take a video of it and then expose this fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
But they would never respond to me every time I kept saying it. So I feel like they maybe figured something was up or something. I don't know. But I kept saying, oh, I really want to see this apartment. Like,
yeah.
Because who sees an apartment like that and goes, oh, I really want to see this.
I don't think I said that.
Please let me see this apartment. It looks so sick.
I mean, it was like newly renovated. So like all the stuff in it was new, but it was
a new mini
fridge. Yeah, but clearly what they did was like there's another half of that apartment beyond the wall that they just decided was a different apartment. Right.
Are
and that
you
like
serious?
That's what they're doing. They're taking already one bedroom apartments and they're splitting them in two and making them into two separate studios that are tiny.
To make you live in the kitchen?
Yeah. That's what they're doing now.
That's so crazy.
Oh my God. And when Fabio so reasonably is like, hey, maybe this is going a little bit too far, they were literally branding him as a socialist.
As Mao.
They called him a socialist. Cam and I were actually at this landlord protest.
Back.
We were walking by City Hall. We're like, what is happening? There's a huge protest. And we see it's the landlords. And there's this guy holding a sign that says human right violation.
You fucking tit.
Jesus I know. Christ. And like we're talking to them and they're like, yeah, this is tyranny. You need and
God.
We were basically like, no, we support this. You guys should have to pay. We don't support landlords actually. You guys should have
they were
to
baffled.
You guys should actually
yeah,
have
are.
To get
they
a health
baffled.
And safety inspection.
Yeah.
Before you rent this out to some freaking working class mother or student who doesn't have any power over anything.
It's like, crazy the bubble they live in, though, because
they don't
assume
realize.
That we're not on. And actually, I got a call from one of the landlords being like, hey, I had recovered something, like, I don't know, during the Hold campaign. And I had connected with this person and they were one of the landlords at the protest. I didn't know. And they called me because they had my number, I guess. And they were saying, oh, like, you guys should cover this like landlord thing. Like landlords getting screwed over in the city. I'm like, that's amazing. Like,
yeah, it sounds
and
awesome.
And he was just like, I let him talk for about 10 to 15 minutes. I just wanted to hear what he had to say. And then eventually I told him like, yeah, I'm a renter and I get screwed over by my landlord and I'm happy that you guys are having to pay this thing and like I don't support And, like, he kept saying, like, well, we're going to have to pass off, like, we can't eat this cost. We're going to have to make the tenants
They're gonna
pay
do
it.
That
I'm like,
anyway.
I'm like, why? I'm like, do you think I'm in support of this? Like, you think
and
you
also,
could just, I'm like, where did the tenants get to pass that cost off to?
Well, and also,
to
like,
no one.
Like, I love that, that's the argument. Oh, we're going to pass it off to tenants. Oh, so if we stop this, you'll stop raising rent? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, no, they're not going to fucking do that. They're going to raise it at the same rate regardless.
Yeah. Right.
But there's also a problem, like, with, I think, like, the quote-unquote good politicians trying to, like, regulate these types of things. And as much as I'm, like, in favor of things like inspections and health and safety, make them upkeep their place.
Yeah.
The problem is, without rent control and without... these exactly, the landlords in a way are not wrong in that it is going to fuck over the tenants even more
by
they're going to do it but that's the thing, is you are giving them the ability to just outsource that cost to the tenants instead of doing this while also protecting the tenants. It's the same thing with wages, right? Obviously minimum wage increases are positive, but also we know that companies use that as an excuse to make the employees eat the cost, and they raise prices and it doesn't do anything. So it's like, you also need price controls. You need rent controls.
You can't just
you
do
need
one
regulation.
Half of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Because otherwise the conservatives have a point when they say that these things cause inflation.
Yeah.
They do in some respect.
Well, and this
is an incomplete policy.
This is the other thing about, like, I've been, like, pulling my fucking hair out with the discourse around the carbon tax shit lately, because you get the two sides, the conservative and liberal arguments. Again, the liberals are saying, well, we need this for, you know, we're going to save the environment with this carbon tax or whatever the fuck. And then you got conservatives who are like, this is going to be passed on to people at the tanks, and it's already too expensive, and fuck you. And I actually kind of agree with the conservatives on that. Now, they're obviously doing it for different reasons. But the liberals coming back and saying, well, you know, it's saving the environment. No, it's not doing fucking shit. All it's doing is passing on. It's a regressive tax against the poor.
Yeah.
Because people have to pay for gas to get to work in this fucking country because of public transportation.
Mm-hmm. As long as we're dependent on cars and, like, gasoline, we have to pay for it. So it's like, if you really want to save the planet, give us trains and buses and
fuck
trolleys.
A carbon tax.
Like,
but someone needs to pay, though. And this is a class question, because who pays? Who pays for the cost that who pays for the environmental crisis? Should it be working people who had nothing to do with getting us in this crisis, who have been surviving, who need cars to get to work,
who have the smallest carbon footprint,
who have to live? Or is it the billionaire class who actually contributes to the taxing people who are getting to work is not going to do shit when billionaires still have private jets and when we're expanding the fossil fuel industry, we're building pipelines to get that oil that's then taxed. It does nothing other than make it seem like you're taking this seriously to appease a demographic base that cares about environmental issues.
Yeah, and that's what, like, Eric Kuzmarek, the MP over in East Windsor and Tecumseh, Liberal MP, he was going on Twitter about that. Just, like, the liberals are doing so much for the environment. Look at this carbon tax is going to do this, this, and this, and this. And it's like, bro, aren't you literally making Canada one of the top 10 oil producers in the entire world? Like, aren't you increasing oil production by 10 to 20% this year under your government? Like, you can't sit there and talk about
how green you are.
So green because of the carbon tax, at the same time increase fossil fuel production and allow the increasing of fossil fuel production for private fucking ownership as well, right? And then the other side of that, like, there's a bunch of liberals on various social media I saw being like, well, you know, in the UK and in France, they pay $2.25 a liter, so we should just stop complaining because it's really not that expensive here. And it's like, first of all, you're showing your class position. And second of all, they have fucking trains and buses and shit in those countries. They actually have, like, public transit infrastructure where if you choose not to own a car, for the most part, if you live in one of those cities or towns in either of those countries, you're fine. You can get around still. You cannot do that in Canada.
Yeah.
Anywhere. Maybe downtown Toronto. Maybe.
Yeah.
But even then, you're going to need a car at some point.
Yeah. Well, like, unless you're in Toronto, Vancouver, or Montreal, you need a car.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, so it's a dumb argument to say that, oh, well, Europe, the gas prices are so much higher. In Europe, they rely a lot less on cars. That's just not an argument that we can make over here. And I hate when I see people who I know are, like, smarter than that not connect those dots. Anyway, fucking carbon tax is bad, you guys. It's anti-worker. And that doesn't mean you agree with the conservatives. Yeah. You know, you can have a nuanced position.
Exactly. Well, that's the conservative playbook, is they say things that intuitively are right, and that they speak a more working class language, right?
They do, yeah. Which is dangerous.
The liberals speak the language of the rule of the upper middle class, kind of like
professional middle class,
PMC kind of thing. Whereas the conservatives use working class talking points, borderline socialist talking points. You listen to someone like Tucker Carlson, right? Out of context, he sounds like a communist, yeah. And a lot of outside of like the transphobia and the racism and the xenophobia.
Right, that's where they get.
But when he talks about class, he sounds like a communist.
Yeah,
right. But this is their entire strategy, because they tap into this class consciousness that has nowhere else to go, because there are no labor institutions, and because the NDP also only appeals not to the workers but to the professional managerial class, and is so tied to the liberals that. That's just a source of power and getting working class people to tap into a reactionary politics.
Yeah.
So it's not wrong to say that the conservatives are right on certain things. They say the thing how it is, but then they don't. It's for totally nefarious reasons.
Right. I mean, literally. Yes. Do conservatives generally want to keep gas prices a little lower to appease a base? Yeah, sure. Are they also going to increase fossil fuel production to the point where in 10 years we're all going to fry to death? Yeah, they also want that, you know, and they're going to fucking reel back rights for LGBTQ folks and for women and for racial minorities and et cetera, right? Yeah. We know what the conservatives will do when they're in power, but it is that rhetoric that's so fucking dangerous because they do get people to vote for them based on it. Yeah. And the liberals are just so fucking stupid. Like, they're just so stupid. They're like, wow, we're just going to do the right thing.
Exactly. And they're going to get, it's like, they are going to be in power.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's because of the liberals. And honestly, like, I don't even want to blame the liberals, because the liberals are the center. Yeah. And we're holding on to an idea of like the status quo being preserved in a time when there's mass political polarization, and when we're seeing phenomena around the world of the center collapsing, of the status quo collapsing and spilling hard line to the left and to the right.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you had the Bernie phenomenon, you had the Jeremy Corbyn phenomenon, you have these like mass
Trump on the other side,
Trump on the other side, you know, Bolsonaro, Lula, all these like really hyper polarized political discourses around the world. Canada is a little bit delayed on that process, and Trudeau has managed to like hold on by a thread. But that is collapsing now, and he is done. Collapsing. He's done for. The status quo in Canada is done. And the problem is, actually, the NDP has so wedded itself to the status quo with their what was it, the confidence deal for the Liberal budget that they signed on to, where they basically said, oh, you're pissed off at the Liberals. We are part of the Liberals.
Yeah.
We support them.
But we drag them left. Supposedly.
We drag them left.
Like, does that actually happen? Like,
they drag you right.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually.
Mm. Yeah.
And the NDP is going to lose now because they're a party of losers. And we're going to be stuck with a conservative reactionary government.
Probably they a majority,
speak to,
too.
Exactly. Because they speak to class issues. And look at what Polyev is saying about Israel. Look what he's saying about LGBT youth.
Yeah.
He might say, okay, gas will be a little cheaper. It won't be cheaper.
It won't be.
It won't be cheaper, but he's saying it.
Yeah, he'll take the tax off, so it will appear cheaper for a minute, and then it'll
bump
back up, right? Because inflation is still a thing. Anyway, welcome back to the River and the Land. Travis Laver here with Cameron Francis and Bilal Rafiq. We were just off the cuff there. But I think this dovetails into all the things that we always talk about. I feel like this is just the constant conversation that we're having. But yeah, welcome back. We did the Ricardo Trajan episode last week, and that was great and wonderful. And then we said, okay, we're going to record the first half, so that part of the reason was so that we could talk about Punk for Palestine, and we didn't talk about it. We just didn't talk about it. We like completely glossed over it.
Punk for Palestine was amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Literally, the bar, like Fog Lounge, was at capacity for like the entire night, and we were over capacity and having to turn people away at the door.
It's already happened. Like. They can't shut them down in retrospect. It's fine.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure they were.
It looked like. There was a lot of people. It was the most packed I've ever seen Fog in nearly 20 years of going to that establishment. I've never seen it like that in my life.
Literally.
Yeah.
We raised around $4,000.
Yeah.
But I think we should kind of say, like, just give an update on, like, the logistical aspect of that. So. We want to be totally transparent. The money has not actually been donated yet. and we're going to be giving updates on that as to why. But Palestine Action, which is the direct action network that we are looking to give this money to because we as a podcast are aligned with their tactics, their website was like hacked or something.
Yeah, it was.
It looks like by some Zionist thing, and it's very sketchy. So we don't want to donate to that website until we're sure it's going to Palestine Action. Mm-hmm. So we've been trying to get in touch with them and go from there.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to attempt to do that a little bit longer. If it's still sketchy, then we're looking into more local mutual aid options.
Yeah.
But obviously a lot of people donated to this, and we just want to be transparent with where everyone's money's going.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will, like I say, I think at the end of the day, it will end up at Palestine Action, I hope, because
they seem back up and running now,
I think.
Should take another look today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I checked the link a few days ago, and it seemed legit again. Like, it seemed like it was back to the way it was before, so.
Yeah,
it did get hacked. It was weird.
Yeah, it was really weird. And we're going to post, like, a receipt once it's donated and stuff, but if you're wondering why there hasn't been a confirmation, that's why so far. It's just been sus.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I do really appreciate my brand new Telecaster that I just bought. It's true. Really nice. Yeah, so
we don't have to worry about rent for a few months.
Just unemployed, and I have a new Telecaster. Or no, I don't actually. It's fine.
Travis is wearing all Gucci right now.
My gold chain.
He's got a grill.
Yeah, we'll donate it. Don't worry, we'll be fine. We'll donate. Totally.
So here's the thing: we could donate that $4,000, or we wait a little bit longer. I will turn that $4,000 into $40,000.
With baseball cards.
Exactly. I have some investment
in crypto.
I heard of this shitcoin thing that I hear is really gonna pop off.
Yeah, we're creating a new digital currency called River and Land Coin. We're gonna be rich, you guys. Exactly. So yeah, that's the update. It was great. If you were there, thank you so much for coming out. It was a crazy experience. And I will say, I'm gonna call out just a little bit of a call out here. Musicians around my age, where were you? Where were you? Because it was all younger folks. There were a few of you out there. I don't want to denigrate some of the musicians who did show up, but I expected more.
Mm-hmm.
I expected more of my sort of generation to be more active there, and they just didn't come. Mm-hmm. So I know some of you had good reasons. I don't want to shit on all of you. I get it, but some of you don't have good reasons. I think you just have bad politics. And so if you happen to find yourself listening to this, fucking do better.
Damn.
I mean, honestly, my generation of musicians has never been particularly political. It's always been a thing. I was the political one, you know? So,
interesting.
It is interesting. It was mostly younger musicians and friends of musicians. And obviously, there's a lot of Palestinian folks there too.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because I thought every Palestinian martyr was going to roll over in their grave as some Muslim fundamentalists who aren't Palestinian were criticizing over for doing this event, saying that every Palestinian martyr would not accept the money. And
so we should just take the $4,000 and throw it into the river, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they don't want. I'm sure that if you told Palestinians that people in Windsor, Ontario, gathered into a community space and raised thousands of dollars of our hard-earned money to support their cause, they would just spit in our face.
Yeah, and I was overwhelmed. I didn't think it was going to I thought it was going to be busy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was going to be like that.
Yeah.
By the time I played, and I played early, it was 9
o'clock.
It was rammed. I've never played to an audience that size in Fog.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And then just
it was the people also who were Meandergreen's comeback show, too.
Yeah.
So I think that helped.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the bands obviously did bring some people. Everybody was there for Palestine. I don't think anybody came just to see the bands.
Yeah.
Everybody was very aware of what was going on, you know? There were people who were getting turned away because we were at or over capacity. People were getting turned away and still donating money.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, well, here, take the $15.
Yeah.
Even if I can't come in, take the $15.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I was really impressed with the arts and music community here for stepping up. That was really cool. And shouts out to Fog Lounge for letting us do it, because there's a lot of venues that wouldn't let us do it. Not necessarily in this city, I don't know, but in other cities, events like this were getting shut down.
Yeah. Exactly. And there, regardless, obviously it went smoothly. There wasn't any issue or anything like that, but there very well could have been. Fog did take that risk for the community. So major, major shout out to Tom and Fog.
Yeah, 100%.
Respect. And that is allyship.
Yeah.
At its best.
Yeah, and it's cool to see a different generation of people attending Fog and it being a more progressive and radical group. I like that because it hasn't always been that space over the years. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's nice to see. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Next time, a bigger venue, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like there's... I feel like we could have done a bigger venue.
Oh, we could have done... I mean, Meteor is only 40 more in capacity than Fog, but that we easily could have done it.
That would have been fine, yeah. I think. That would have fit everyone that wanted to be yeah. there at once.
Yeah.
That's true.
Next time.
I think we will probably do something like this again.
We should do it again. Yeah. That was awesome. Going.
Like, yeah. As long as there's... Because at this rate, you know, the war is not... slowing down. If anything, it is speeding up, and
yeah, mm-hmm. it's actually getting more complicated. So why don't we use that as a segue to briefly, let's keep it to 10 minutes or so, but maybe update on what's going on in Palestine.
We haven't spoken that directly about Palestine on this podcast in a sec
since Maram was on. That was the last time actually we did. Yeah,
like, granted, we haven't been podcasting as much, but I guess, like, what are the major updates?
I mean,
since
like,
Iran.
The big one is Iran getting involved in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm sure Palestine played a role in that, but I think the bigger thing was that Israel was bombing Iranian embassies in, where was it, Lebanon?
In Damascus. And they killed Syria, in Syria, which Israel also militarily occupies.
Yeah.
This is a common thing with Palestine and with the Middle East in general, is Iran being situated as a, not an imperialist power per se, but as a regional hegemonic force. You know, they're a more industrialized, bigger economy, bigger population, stronger military. They're kind of the other big guy in the Middle East, right? Mm-hmm. You have Israel, you have Iran, kind of Turkey, kind of Egypt. Egypt's maybe on the decline, but everything is blamed on Iran, right? Hamas is not just Hamas. Hamas is seen in Israel, at least according to their propaganda, as a proxy for Iran. Because anyone could tell, you know, Hamas is making these homemade rockets. They're weak on their own. They can't do anything. But the boogeyman standing behind them is Iran. Or in Lebanon with Hezbollah, which actually is a formidable force in its own right and has shattered the myth of Israel's deterrence policy, particularly in like the 2006 invasion, where Israel did not beat Hezbollah Lebanon.
They
got
embarrassed.
They were embarrassed very much so, to the point where Israel changed its military doctrine to something that they call the Dahia doctrine. Dahia is a village in Lebanon that, because Israel could not penetrate it and get through and conquer it, they just destroyed the civilian population and did war crimes. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling. I'm trying to make a coherent point. But the point is that Iran is like the boogeyman. It's like the inverse of like how some people view Israel. Iran is the other one. So Iran getting more involved in this, A, is unprecedented, because Iran, I don't think they've ever attacked Israel. It's also the first time in decades that a major power in the Middle East has, I'm actually not going to say attacked Israel, because they didn't attack Israel. They attacked an Israeli military base as a response to the fact that Israel airstriked a embassy in Damascus, killing 16 people, I believe, which is that's an act of war.
Yeah.
You attack a foreign embassy.
And against international law.
Exactly.
Like, very clearly.
You murdered diplomats. That is a act of war.
Mm.
What Iran did was they attacked the source of the missiles or whatever. They disabled that capability.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is Israel was not able to intercept these missiles. Yeah. Really interesting, given that this is the country that is loaded up with drones, with weapons. They have an Iron Dome defense system that more or less is impenetrable, but these missiles got through somehow. Mm-hmm. So what does that say? I'm not sure. Is Israel weaker now?
They have been preoccupied in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
you know, with wiping an entire population off the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, I don't know. I'm anti-war, and I think we all are here on this podcast. I mean, anti-imperialist war, should say.
Exactly.
And this would qualify as that, I think, at the end of the day. Two major state powers fighting each other, not what we want. But, like, at the same time, it is sort of funny to see the media narrative around this stuff and how, like, the whole retaliation bit that we just talked about is just not being talked about in the media. It's just like it's unprovoked attack.
Right.
And they're making it seem as though Iran is attacking Israel because of Palestine, because of what they're doing in Palestine, which I'm sure is a factor on some level.
I don't think it is, actually.
You don't think it is at all?
No, I don't think, because where have any of the larger Middle Eastern powers been for the last for the 6 months? Time. Where have they been the last, I don't want to say 75 years, because like Jordan, Egypt, Syria, they have intervened. But at this point, they don't give a fuck. They give a fuck about the appearance of seeing being pro-Palestine because it's a lightning bolt issue across the Middle East.
Yeah, and their own population.
But right now, they exactly they retaliated for their own military reasons, and so I think it was calculated just to make themselves seem stronger and more secure, and it was a purely military thing, at least from what I understand so far. Mm-hmm. And that's the key difference. Is like, we're pointing this out not to say we support Iran or we're taking a side between Iran and Israel if this was to escalate. We point this out to underline the hypocrisy and the fact that Israel gets to defend itself against incubator babies, defend itself as in using white phosphorus against them, bombing the living shit out of them, sniping little kids, all these things.
Executing doctors.
Exactly.
Which is the thing that was happening this past week, we just don't really talk about
anymore. Exactly. Like, they're just Nazis at this point.
Yeah, no, 100%.
That's self-defense. But Iran, which is legitimately attacked, legitimately defends itself. And Israel suddenly calling an emergency meeting at the UN Security Council, I think.
I thought UN was Hamas.
It is Hamas, which is Iran. So I don't know how that works. I guess international law is selective, but...
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, the update on Palestine itself is that it's still happening, and it's getting more and more complete. And, we're up to over 34,000 people now.
Yeah,
that we know of that have been killed, probably more than that.
It's got to be.
And I know this is more of a tangent and a side point, but I think we need to appreciate in scope that Israel has an interest in conveying a smaller death toll than actually exists. Yeah. The supposedly Hamas controlled health ministry.
It's pronounced Hamas.
Hamas also has an interest in not exaggerating the death toll or underplaying it. Sorry.
Yeah.
So that they seem like we're not just getting eviscerated and we didn't just drag our people into this. The death toll is far higher than 40,000.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if it was 100,000 or more than that, because these are documented deaths.
Yeah.
It's based off confirmed deaths where we have the name of the person.
How
do you do that when there's no internet, when they've had barely any electricity for 6 months? When the entire infrastructure, this is a failed, I don't want to say failed state, but it's the
never
same
because
it's not a
with,
state.
Yeah.
It's a crumbling
failed
society.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there are tens of thousands buried under the rubble.
Yeah.
I think it was Ralph Nader actually randomly put out this essay like maybe a month or two ago saying that the death toll in his estimation is 200,000, which I think might be like kind of on the high end, but it's far worse.
We're talking about a population that began as 2 million people, so it's a significant portion either way.
Exactly.
Right? Like, yeah, it's...
But we're not going to know until years later, until the damage is done, the same way that when during World War II, they didn't understand or appreciate the scope of the Holocaust, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the initial estimates for the Holocaust were under 1 million.
Exactly.
After the war, and then it you know
what was it three
six
no, six six, well, six to yeah. seven
yeah so
and it's and, probably more to be honest
yeah
it's always yeah. more
yeah. And look how many millions were displaced all over the world,
exactly,
injured, had their lives ruined by generational trauma, right? Like, I mean, it's the toll goes so much beyond a number of dead people, right? It's the evisceration of cultures, the traumatization of an entire people, and it's just so, I mean, yeah, there was a woman on, I don't know what outlet she was on. It was some mainstream outlet where they were trying to, she was a doctor in Palestine. She was from the U.S., I think, but she was working over there. And the media was trying to spin it in this like, well, you know, when you're there, do you see Hamas around? And she's like, no, I see doctors getting executed point blank by IDF soldiers. I see nurses getting executed in a row, point blank. In these hospitals, I see patients getting murdered in their beds. Hamas ain't anywhere around, actually. And the person on the news is just like, oh, yeah, we go to break.
Yeah, like, go to break. And so what, like, if they were around?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, but it's just the absurdity of even being like, of even talking about that. And here's this woman who was on the ground, knows what's up, and has no reason to lie about it. She's not like working for anybody. She's a doctor, right? Yeah. And saying, this is what I saw with my eyeballs. This is what's happening there. You know, and the news still being like, la-di-da, well, so Iran did the thing. You know, and it's just, I don't know. It's again, like, we're watching what would have happened or what did happen on this continent.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had, you know, social media and shit, you know, right? Like, it happened here, too, in the same way. And I think that's, like, it's not that, like, not to maximize or minimize either one of those things, but just to say that this is a tried and true process that we know exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it. We know what their end game is. And we're just watching it unfold helplessly, most of us. You know?
I am honestly done with just the discourse on it and the like, just the way that we're expected to talk about this, where the idea of resistance or armed resistance is stigmatized.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to say you're pro-Palestine, it's one thing, but don't you dare say that you support the resistance.
Yeah.
Don't you dare indicate that these people need to have someone to fight for them. You're allowed to have sympathy for Palestinians as victims, but not as people with agency who are willing to fight for their people, and that is what they should be doing. So when people say, like, oh my God, is Hamas there? Who cares if Hamas is there? Because who else is fighting for these people?
Who else is doing it?
And they need to be they do need to be fighting for themselves. They have a right to. Legally, they have. I don't care about the law, but I don't know, man.
Even if you want to play the game of international law being something that we should absolutely care about, you know, which depends on what international law you're talking about, but yeah, we should care about that.
Exactly.
We you know, like, the fact that it is actually allowed under international law to take up arms and defend against an occupier, even if it wasn't allowed. I think that, like, I mean, I pretty openly talk about how I'm pro-violence when it comes, you know, selective. I'm not just like, you know, whenever, you know, you want to do it. But, you know, I do think that when you're facing a violent state, which all of them are at the end of the day, and they have a monopoly on violence. That's the other thing we don't talk about, right? In Canada, even, like, the state has a monopoly on violence. No one else is allowed to commit violence except the state. That's the same thing in every state, every established state. So, you know, fuck that shit. We should be able to defend ourselves.
Exactly.
And they should be able to defend themselves.
And we don't have to support Hamas politically to understand that to the indigenous population in Gaza, to the civilian population, they have assumed a role as their defenders. And Palestinians, I don't want to say all, I don't even want to say half, but a sizable amount of them in Gaza right now do look to that group as a sort of leadership in the face of this genocide. I don't care, maybe you support the PFLP or the DFLP or PIJ or any other group, right? But the point is, you should be allowed to say that Palestinians have a right to defend themselves from a genocide. The same way that the National FLN in Algeria, the National Liberation Front, which was much more violent than Hamas, which killed way more civilian people, settlers, than Hamas. They went in with suicide bomb settlers, French settlers in Algeria, or the ANC in South Africa, which did terrorist methods. Yeah. In hindsight, history kind of remembers these groups differently.
Yeah. And honestly, like, the majority of the Israeli population are settlers or direct descendants of settlers who chose to go there and participate in a genocide. And I don't have sympathy for those people. I'm sorry. I just don't. And maybe that makes me fucking Hamas or whatever. I don't care. Like, if you choose to leave your Brooklyn life or your life in Belgium or your life in Australia or wherever the fuck and go to that place because you believe it is your homeland, and in order to make it your homeland, you have to violently dispossess the people who are already there, I have no sympathy for you. And what happens to you happens to you, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe that makes me a crazy person.
With the exception
person,
of children.
Yes,
of course.
With the
exception of children.
There are innocents there.
Exactly. And when you're talking about settler colonialism, the lines between civilians and non-civilians is blurred.
Yeah.
What I would say is, here's the difference. When October 7th happened, Israelis rushed to the airports, the dual citizen ones, and they went back to Poland and they went back to Brooklyn to wait out the war. Mm-hmm. The war happens. What do Palestinians do? They refuse to leave their lands because they have nowhere else to go because it's where they're actually fucking from.
Yeah, exactly. They can't just scatter back to their...
Exactly. They can't go back to Brooklyn and go to Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
They're intense right now.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say every single person in Israel is guilty because that's not the case. What I mean is specifically the settler population who is... The people who are making the decisions to go to the West Bank and kick people out of their actual homes...
Yeah.
And take them over and just like, bye, hey, fuck you.
Yeah.
Those people deserve what happens to them. I'm sorry. They're
fascist terrorists.
Exactly.
They're literally settler terrorists. Honestly, man, like my perspective on Palestine has very much shifted since even we started this podcast. Like, if you go back and listen to the first couple episodes on Palestine, I do think they're good. I think it's a necessary analysis, but I think the point of emphasis was different from where I'm at now. I think we when we started this project, we put a lot of emphasis on the point of internationalism and a looking on things on a class basis, mm-hmm. and emphasizing the need for an organic unity between progressive Israeli workers and Palestinian workers, and pointing out the cliche of like, you guys are being divided and conquered. Imperialism hurts Israelis and Palestinians. Mm-hmm. You guys don't benefit from each other's oppression. Israelis don't benefit from the occupation of Palestine. I'm not as sold on that specific part of the analysis at this point. Just given the course of events, I don't think that the Israeli working class is a normal working class.
Yeah, no.
Because what was missing from that early analysis is, and I think the gap that we had was seeing this as not just a class oppression, but also as a colonial oppression, where, yes, Israel is a class society where the ruling class does exploit the Israeli working class, but the existence of a underclass of occupied Palestinians mm-hmm. creates a more complex dynamic, where it is harder to actually achieve that unity. Because it's not wrong to call for that unity. We do call for unity between workers around the world. But those calls have been falling on deaf ears since before the creation of Israel. If you go back to the Histadrut, the Israeli so-called union federation leading up to the Nakba, there were attempts for Israeli and Arab workers to unite. But through a concerted policy called Jewish labor, they created an underclass and an upper class of just Jewish workers to enjoy the rights. So Israel's never been a normal class society.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder to... You can't just say you guys need to unite and then that'll happen. Mm-hmm. There are other issues that we need to address. And a big part of it is for the settlers, who are technically workers, they're also settlers though.
Yeah,
they can go in and take a home if they want. How do you say that they don't benefit from the oppression of Palestinians? They do. It's free land.
And again,
go and take their fucking house. That's a benefit.
No one has ever said that people couldn't move to that area and enjoy their lives there. That's not the point. Moving to a place and being a settler colonial, part of a settler colonial project, two very different things, right? Yeah. And it's also like, it's very similar, I think, to what North America experienced, right? Where you had kind of a uniting working class between like white workers and black workers in the United States during slavery, before slavery, I guess, before indentured servitude specifically, you started to have this uniting of these two groups, mm-hmm. and the ruling class is like, oh fuck, we're fucked if that happens. So let's make these black folks slaves, and then we'll make these other white workers have a lot more rights in comparison to them. And we'll pit those two classes against each other by creating a new underclass,
by creating the white proletariat.
Yeah, exactly.
You reinforce that. And it does reinforce class. Because that's the thing. On a technical level, Israelis are oppressed by the occupation, but it's both.
Yeah.
And this is where like you get into Hegel and the dialectic of the master and the slave, where the master is also oppressed by the oppression. Yeah. It's a whole thing. Essay or great portion of that work on this.
And even calling them masters is like, well, like again, like Irish workers were not masters of much, right? in the United States, but they, you know, still existed with a lot more rights than slaves, right? And so it's the creation of underclass important. And again, that's not even talking about the indigenous population that was railroaded over, literally, in North America, which again created an underclass and allowed the working class to see themselves as being more aligned with the ruling class against this other thing, mm-hmm. right, that needed to be exterminated or pushed away.
And at the end of the day, to overthrow imperialism, colonialism, capitalism, ism, whatever you want to call it, ism, you do need that unity between all workers on a class basis.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, and where my position has changed on this, is the road to getting there is a lot more complicated. Mm-hmm. And we can't limit ourselves to just tactics that are going to not alienate Israeli workers. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, I do think it's valid to like take up armed resistance. I do think it's valid to be fighting for national self-determination without just being like, oh, we all need to unite. Like, I think the progressive, we need to still make those appeals, and the progressive Israelis are going to come over to that side.
Well, I was going to say, there's going to be a which side are you on moment, where exactly. it's like, which one are you defending? Are you defending your masters, or are you working with us to
exactly.
dismantle
them,
Exactly,
it needs right? to get to that point.
Yeah.
And that is what Hamas did. Yeah. I don't think they did it intentionally. I don't think they thought October 7th would be a point of sharpening contradiction to the point where things are at kind of a moment where something is going to give.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we're at now. And it's possible to say where this is going to go. But I just on this topic, like, because I don't want to belate this, but everyone should read an article on Left Voice called, I think it's called Palestinian Liberation and the Israeli Working Class. And it goes into this history. This was a useful article for me as someone who's traditionally taken like an orthodox Marxist analysis of colonialism and looked at it kind of an oversimplified lens of like they just need to unite against the colonizers. I think when you put it in the context of a real settler colonial movement, it becomes more complicated. And these questions get harder to answer. And I think this article is a good starting point for that.
Yeah, we'll throw it up in the show notes.
Yeah,
I actually will because I have it up here now. So
sounds good. We should all read it, actually. It's fucking great.
So that was our Palestine update. And we're going to continue on to the thing that... So the other thing we want to talk about today.
What is the other thing?
Well, it's our lovely mayor, Drew Dilkins.
It's the big news story.
He's in the news.
The big Dilk.
Drew Dilkins... Yeah, so he, like, I guess, like, part of, because news no longer appears on people's social media feeds, I feel like I read less news, which is both good for my mental health and bad for this podcast. But, like, you know, I've tried to make a habit of, like, okay, no, we gotta go and still go to these, even directly go to these sites, because even though mainstream news sucks, and in Windsor it really sucks, they're still kind of the only ones talking about half the shit that's going on at city council or anywhere else, and so... You might have missed this story. I don't know if you're listening to this podcast, you probably didn't, but this is a big one. But Drudelkins is in a little bit of hot water right now because he's being sued. So I think we actually mentioned on this podcast, if I remember correctly, we talked about when he fired this person. So Drudelkins fired a city engineer. It was his first move with strong mayor powers. Remember we were talking about strong mayor powers on a previous episode. And this was his first move. With strong mayor powers, he fired the city engineer that was like kind of came out of nowhere. It was like, why did he fucking fire a city engineer? Like, who was only like wasn't on the job that long, and like what happened? And we kind of all speculated at the time that it was some sort of political issue or just didn't like the guy. And I think he went on the I think Drew Dilkins went on AM 800 and actually slandered the guy. Like, he started talking shit about him or something. But anyway, I'm just gonna do like
it's gonna make it better.
Yeah, I'm going to read part or most of this article, and we can stop to talk about it as we go through. But just in terms of like when we're giving our opinions about this, I just want to like blanket allegedly right now, just put a big blanket of allegedly over everything we're saying, because this is a lawsuit that the former engineer is bringing to Drudelkins in the city. So anything we say of our opinion, it comes along with an allegedly, because we don't know if this stuff's proven. I just don't want to get any kind of flack, you know? Anyway, so the Windsor Star, fired engineer told, quote, keep mayor happy at all costs in $1.55 million lawsuit. So, a recently fired top city engineer alleges a top-down culture of corruption at the city of Windsor and cites orders from superiors to keep the mayor happy at all costs in a $1.55 million wrongful dismissal lawsuit. A statement of claim filed with the Ontario Superior Court in Toronto last month and obtained by the Windsor Star reveals that Chris Nepsey, turfed in November by Mayor Drew Dilkins using strong mayor powers, claims he suffered considerable mental distress during his time at City Hall. Nepsey alleges he was pressured and coerced into misuse of public funds. The court document claims that Nepsey has been unable to find comparable jobs since the abrupt dismissal, which followed roughly 2 years as a member of the city's corporate leadership team. All claims in the court document are allegations that have not been proven in court, so there you go. Nepsey's Toronto-based lawyer, Howard Levitt, who's a big deal, that dude's been around a long time, could not be reached for comment. Although the city has not yet filed a statement of defense in response to the lawsuit, Dilkins told the Star the city denies all allegations and will vigorously defend its position in court. Quote, as someone who practiced labor and employment law for a number of years before being elected as mayor, I've never seen a former employee file a wrongful dismissal claim against their employer and send chocolates and roses. They're always full of spurious allegations. Interesting that he called them spurious allegations. Every single one he's ever seen, these employees suing their employers. What are they doing? Dilkins terminated Nepsey and city solicitor Shelby Askin-Hager 5 months ago in his first significant use of strong mayor legislation. Changes to the Municipal Act enacted by the Doug Ford Conservatives, giving some heads of council additional powers and duties, and we talked about that at the time. While Askin-Hager's dismissal resulted from an organizational restructuring, according to the mayoral decision, Nepsey's did not. The claim alleges Nepsey was wrongly terminated in an act of reprisal and in bad faith. In September 2021, Nepsey was hired as by then CAO Jason Raynor, whom the council majority voted to sack roughly 6 months later. So he was hired by someone who was then let go under Dilkins as well. So not one of Dilkins's guys, importantly. The lawsuit claims Nepsey immediately observed the top-down culture of corruption that he actively resisted in order to maintain his professional integrity to the extent possible. It goes on to allege that the culture was well known amongst the entire organization, as interim CAO Honorio Colucci described, "Keep the mayor happy at all costs and you won't be a target." The day after Raynor was fired, the document claims Nepsey received a call from Dilkins, who quote, made it clear the lesson he should take from Raynor's dismissal was that it was necessary to ensure the mayor remain happy. The retired CAO, this Colucci guy, returned temporarily to serve as the city's top bureaucrat until Raynor's permanent replacement could be found. Colucci told Nepsey that he was seen as being too close to Mr. Raynor and that he should forget what Mr. Raynor taught him and start focusing on appeasing the mayor and the mayor's supporters, since that was the, quote, Windsor way, the document claims. I know I'm just reading this word for word, but it's fucking...
No.
It's a lot. Wild. Quote, almost every meeting, formal and informal, that Mr. Nepsey had with the CAO commenced with the CAO asking whether he was keeping the mayor happy, the document states. Quote, these meetings were never about the hundreds of millions of dollars of work that Mr. Nepsey was managing in his portfolio. The document alleges Nepsey refused to perform some work assigned to him by councillors Dilkins, Colucci, and current CAO Joe Mancina, work that was, quote, illegal, immoral, and unethical. So he's claiming that the council and the mayor were trying to get him to do illegal shit, and he was like, nah, fuck you, I'm not doing it. And that's part of the reason these troubles started to happen. Nepsey was, quote, regularly subjected to aggressive behavior and was threatened with consequences if he would not comply, the document claims. As part of the pressure, Nepsey's employment was allegedly repeatedly threatened in response to his work refusals. The city and its agents took issue with Nepsey's work refusals, the set alleges, and made frequent attempts to coerce him into participating in the aforementioned illegal content. The document lists five improprieties that Nepsey resisted in participating, one of which alleges he was coerced into covering up costs associated with the Legacy Beacon streetcar project.
Wait, what?
I'll read that again.
Asked to cover the... Sorry, go read it again.
The document lists five improprieties that Nepsey resisted in participating in, one of which alleges he was coerced into covering up costs associated with the Legacy Beacon streetcar project.
So, like, misleading how expensive it would be?
Yeah, it was a cover. That he was coerced into a cover-up of
it. This fucking streetcar, man.
Right? As soon as I read that, I'm like, we're talking about this in the podcast. It's like a beat at this point. It's right outside my apartment, by the way, the streetcar.
The Beacon, Legacy Beacon.
The project's original location required rezoning. To avoid more public scrutiny on an already controversial project, the location was changed, but the tender for the new location was over budget by approximately $3 million, the suit alleges. The mayor and CAO Colucci instructed NEPSI and other staff to, quote, remove internal costs and shift monies, unquote, to make it look like there was enough funding for the project, the set
the suit remember, alleges. We do not have enough money for Save Point. We yeah, just remember can't what the city do it. Won't
fund.
It's going to bankrupt the city. We cannot do it, guys.
Less than a million. That place was...
Yeah, $750,000 a year. Yeah. Is that the thing?
Can't do it. Sorry.
Can't do it.
Die.
But 10.3 for to house a streetcar.
But we will fucking this, lie.
Far more than 10.3. Far more than 10.3, according to the suit.
Oh, far more.
Well, this is the $3 million that was covered up from the public, at least... It was approximately three. It was over budget by approximately $3 million, but that he was told to move the money around to make it look like it wasn't a thing.
Well, originally, I think they said it was 1.5 or something around there. Is that what they thought they were approving for the streetcar?
This was after they moved the location and the price went higher. So again, I'll read it again. The project's original location required rezoning.
Yeah.
To avoid more public scrutiny on an already controversial project, the location was changed.
Yeah.
But the tender for the new location was over budget by approximately $3 million.
Yeah, but so I understand what you're saying, but originally the budget was 1.5.
Yeah.
So to be over by 3, was it 3.5?
I think he's talking about being over by 3 over the 10.3. There's more here.
Over the 10.3.
Yeah, let me read more here because there's more to this.
Or something.
Yeah, there's more to this. So the mayor and CAO Colucci instructed NEPSI and other staff to, quote, remove internal costs and shift monies to make it look like there was enough funding for the project, the suit alleges. God. Other senior leaders refused to sign a report the CAO drafted to hide the costs, the document claims. NEPSI resisted signing, quote, until the CAO stated that by not signing, NEPSI would be showing the mayor that he didn't want to play by his rules and would leave him as a target. In June of 2023, The Star reported that council greenlit $1.9 million more for the project, bringing its funding approval up to $10.3 million. At the time, the increased costs were attributed to inflationary pressures. So this is over and above the 10.3. This is an additional $3 million that it went over budget. And he's alleging that he was told to, what was the quote here? Remove internal costs and shift monies. Yeah.
4 years of safe injection site funding was just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, let's just make it happen. Move it around.
Just move around. Just give it to the cops or something. 4 years of saving people's lives downtown. That's the new unit of measurement is we're going to measure city budget stuff in safe points.
Yeah. So again, I know I'm reading all of this, but there's so much in here. There's more. There's so much more.
Let's keep
it
going.
This is the now he's going to start alleging that the mayor does favors for councilors that like him. So this is the whole other part of it. Fabio's name comes up here too. Another impropriety in the court document alleges former CAO Raynar instructed NEPSI to, in the fall of 2021, include Erskine Street in a road rehabilitation program, even though the street was not included in the council-approved plan. NEPSI objected, but was nevertheless, quote, forced to comply as a favor for Councillor Ed Sleeman, who is a longtime supporter of the mayor. So that's in Ward 5 in Fort City. A third, quote, impropriety alleges the city pressured NEPSI not to proceed with approved infrastructure projects on Barrymore Lane in Sandwich Town, quote, to spite Councillor Fabio Castante. When NEPSI opposed diverting from the council-approved plan, he quote, faced... considerable stress by the mayor's request to find a different unapproved road simply despite the mayor's political opponent.
Wow.
Fabio responded to this too.
Yeah, I saw his response.
Yeah. So the mayor allegedly told NEPSI, quote, after that guy gave us a hard time, find me another fucking road/sewer, any road/sewer somewhere else.
So Dilkins was talking about Fabio, allegedly.
Basically, and what he was saying, he was taking out his anger with Fabio on the people who live in Sandwich Town. And they're fucking roads.
Collective punishment.
Yeah, it's the collective punishment against like people in Ward 2. Already the poorest ward in the city, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, and I drive over there all the fucking time, and my car is getting completely destroyed by the shitty condition of the roads. So this is why it's like, why are the roads always so nice in certain neighborhoods and not elsewhere? Again, allegedly.
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 I mean, walk down the road and see if it's alleged.
I know, yeah. Look at the fucking roads. Like, there's some truth to this somewhere.
Was the road done or not? It wasn't done.
The court document alleges the mayor often forced NEPSI to delay reports about potential projects for the mayor's political advantage and then was forced to take responsibility for the delays. Another impropriety. As an example, the document claims the mayor forced NEPSI to delay the completion of the environmental assessments on Wyandotte Street East and Jarvis Avenue projects, quote, because of the negative impact that would have on former Ward 7 councillor G. Wynne Gill's chances of re-election. Gill was ultimately defeated in his 2022 re-election bid. NEPSI was reprimanded during committee and council meetings for his decision to delay the report, which, quote, tarnished his reputation in the city and certainly contributed to his eventual termination, the document claims. Hughes claimed he was forced to make those delays by the mayor and then was blamed when he did it. It's his fault. A fifth impropriety alleges Windsor councillors regularly ask for favors from NEPSI, including waiving parking fines for construction vehicles involved with home renovations, waiving permits and favors for road repairs in their respective wards. It accuses Ward 7 councillor Angelo Marignani and Ward 1 councillor Fred Francis of asking NEPSI's department to waive parking violations for themselves and their friends and family, something Francis vehemently denied in an interview with The Star. And then Francis said, for myself, friends, and family, that never happened. I would challenge anyone who says otherwise to provide the evidence because it doesn't exist. Francis said he did occasionally pass along resident complaints about parking tickets since he believes in advocating for constituents, but always accepted the administration's decisions. So that's Francis's response there. But again, like allegations, a lot of these are believable already. So, you know, Marignani did not want to comment on that. And the last part of it is just that NEPSI did work for the town of Essex for 14 years as the chief administrative officer, or the chief administrative officer of the town. He was not looking to leave, the claim says, but then he was heavily recruited by the city and like convinced to leave this secure position he was going to have to retirement to come work for the city, and then 2 years later was fired and now he can't find work. So he's fucked, basically. And this has like, this kind of thing would ruin your career.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, so that's the thing that's happening right now. A lot of shit in there that like is pretty revealing and like, again, allegedly, but also entirely believable, all of it.
It's totally believable. Like, and the thing is, it's like, if the rumors have always been that Dilkins is a big bully.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help his case when he goes and talks mad shit aggressively about people that, you know, are working with him, or like just like disgruntled employees with him. Like, he talks shit publicly about right. these people, and it or doesn't us. Help his case. Huh?
He's done that to us too.
What do you
like
mean?
We've gone on the radio yeah. to talk about oh. advocating for harm reduction, and the next day he goes on and says that didn't name us, but said that the advocates are liars and they're yeah. making up stuff.
Yeah, like a lot of counselors do that over the years too. Yeah, no, it's this sort of, I mean, everybody that I know who's ever worked with Dilkins directly has come out saying exactly this kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I've heard so this like, for years.
Exactly. Like, and whether or not the whole Fred Francis stuff is true and Marnie, I mean, that's sort of small compared to a lot of the allegations in here, but like, I don't know, maybe that's not entirely true. I mean, it is still a lawsuit, and while, you know, we should take that with the grain of salt that it comes with, but like, yeah, it's all like all this sort of top-down shit, appease the mayor at all costs, do what he wants or get or lose your job. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been everything I've ever heard about what goes on Same. At City Hall Same. Since he's been elected, and previous to that with Eddie Francis too. Almost like they're similar or something.
What I find interesting is like the libs have come out and use this to just absolutely rail Dilkins.
Yeah.
And
which
I'm not against that.
Which, yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, rail Dilkins.
Yeah, like former counselors like Chris Holt and Reno Bordelon have like extensively posted about this stuff on like Facebook. And
hey, Reno wrote in the Windsor Star as well about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Reno I saw that article. And you yeah. read it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you have thoughts on it.
I can't
it,
remember. Yeah. He basically was just saying that this is part, like, par for the course what his experience was. I think he gave some personal examples of like working with Dilkins yeah. and how that went. I mean, I think to like Reno was, it's funny to say like Fabio was like an enemy of Dilkins, because Fabio is, I feel like he doesn't ruffle a lot of feathers on count,
not, probably, that, not the way that Holt and Reno did,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah. But like, yeah, so compare, you could imagine what, you know, the kind of, what's it called, like
backlash.
Yeah, backlash Reno would have received, or Chris Holt, right? Because Reno was like really vocally against Dilkins, and I think Dilkins took a lot out on downtown. Oh, yeah. And I know this to be true, that, I mean, I shouldn't say that, maybe allegedly, you know, there's rumors that, you know, there's certain things downtown, like the way downtown is in a large part has to do with the fact that Dilkins took it out on Reno. He didn't like that, you know, how Reno was advocating for certain things in the city or whatever. So
yeah, one of the few ways over the years that I've like sort of respected Reno was his willingness to go after Dilkins in that way. But as you were saying, what is the issue with that, like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, right?
Well, yeah, we need to be extremely careful about reducing systemic issues to just like a few bad actors or corruption. This idea of like, oh, it's just, if only we got Dilkins out. Dilkins is corrupt. Dilkins is the reason why the city sucks. He's doing bad things. He's making bad decisions. He's making bad policies. He's a bad guy. He's a bully.
Which he is doing all those things.
He is, of course. Right, and fuck Dilkins. You know what? We're not like pro Dilkins. We're not we're not saying that corruption is good. We're not saying that things wouldn't be better if he wasn't so corrupt. But what is the alternative? We get a liberal politician in who's not corrupt, who does things by the books, and who still controls the city.
Yeah.
Fucking developers.
Exactly.
The developers still own everything. But that's the thing, is the corruption means nothing. Because like the system working in a non-corrupt way is still corrupt for most people who exist. Yeah. The landlords, the capitalists, the developers, they still run the city for the benefit of big business, and it's for profit over people regardless.
Because
look at these same non-corrupt politicians aren't advocating for harm reduction. I know that's my beat today. I keep talking about harm reduction because I think it's a good example, though, as something that is for people and not profit, and that businesses are against. This is something that the business community has come out and say, we don't want this. And even the liberal politicians, even Fabio Constante at this point, is against. And is saying we don't need to get this open by any means necessary, right? They've capitulated to this.
Yeah.
So even if these better faith actors or less corrupt people were in power, would it make a difference?
Yeah,
the fundamental issue is still there. And I'm not that interested in splitting hairs.
Yeah,
between these guys. Not that Dilkins has hair to split.
Yeah,
but
and what we know about liberals is that they are just as corrupt, right?
Burn.
They like liberals will eventually also do corrupt shit and have similar things. I mean, there's all kinds of rumors about Justin Trudeau being exactly this kind of guy, right? The top down culture. If you're not one of his guys, you're gonna get fucking turfed from the party, which we've seen happen. Like, there's been books written about it, right? By that one woman in BC, the Indigenous woman who was like essentially just like turfed out of the party for challenging Trudeau on certain things. So like, you're right. This is kind of built into how the system works. It's also like ironic that all this, like, that this is, he's been empowered, Dilkins, that is, by the strong mayor powers that were handed to him by the premier, right? Like, this is part of the system. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to grant strong mayor powers to a mayor, you will what? He used those powers and did stuff? What? Like, yeah, like this, like, it's built into how the system works. It was built into how the system worked before. It's really built into it now, because now Dilkins can just do whatever the fuck he wants for the most part. He doesn't even need council to do shit.
Yeah.
To do a lot of shit, at least. So, yeah, no, you're right. Like, again, it's like we always sort of say that there always ends up being this, like, liberal side and conservative side, and then we're like, you're both fucked.
Yeah, they're both wrong.
Yeah.
They're, like, valid for attacking him, but, like, I don't want the libs in charge instead.
Right.
I mean, there's no alternative right now, so whatever. I'm just sitting this out. This isn't, like,
it our just, fight. Yeah, like, it doesn't really make
sense. Let them battle it out. Let them make a show. I'm just sitting back and, like, it's a soap opera for me. It's entertainment.
Yeah, it's entertainment. Exactly.
We have the actual working class has no stakes in this fight. It's a fight between the left wing bureaucrats and the right wing bureaucrats.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because I would love to see Trudeau fall. Like, I would love to see it. We'd get our fucking popcorn ready if Trudeau started to like lose his position in government. This ain't gonna do that. But you know, if other stuff comes out, if some of this illegal shit comes out, he might, and that's going to be entertaining as shit. I'm going to watch the fuck out of that.
Honestly, though, like, the way that Windsor is on a political level, I would not be surprised if Dilkins survives this, even if he's found guilty, even if, like, it's like, oh my god, he's so corrupt. I could somehow see Dilkins pulling through just because there is so much apathy in the city.
Yeah.
And or yeah, there's
just, honestly, people who like that. People go, yeah, Dilkins is doing the thing. It's like, getting that sort shit of,
done.
He's getting shit done. Yeah, fuck these libs for their, you know, doing it. They should punish them. Like, a lot of people who have that opinion, yeah. right, who operate like that. That's why Trump got elected, or part of it.
Exactly, but it's actually, like, the same argument that, you know, whenever there's a issue, the status quo blames the right wing rather than the system. They blame Trump. Mm-hmm. Everything that's ever been wrong with the United States is Trump's fault.
Yeah.
Literally. It's all Trump's fault.
It's true.
Literally every issue. And even when Biden's in power, it's still Trump's fault. Yeah. It's all Trump.
Even
still,
when Biden's doing the exact same shit.
Exactly.
Trump
when
did.
Biden does worse stuff, it's Trump's fault. Yeah. And it's always going to be Trump's fault. It's the same thing we're seeing in Palestine right now, where okay, like, the existence of Israel is being called into question, whether it's a good thing or not. And I think, like, the status quo is getting ahead of that, and liberal pundits are just blaming Netanyahu, and they're making it about the personality of Netanyahu. He is just going too far. Right. He's too far right-wing. He's too unhinged. They're not questioning the logic of Zionism itself. It's just this brand of Zionism. If we had if we had liberal Zionism, that would be better, because that's the stable Israel.
Right.
It's the same kind of logic where Dilkins is going too far. He's too corrupt. Let's get, I don't know, fucking Chris Holt in there. It's
yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. What's Chris Holt going to do? He's still going to hand a bunch of money to developers to fuck us all.
They're actually more pro-development. Yeah. Dilkins is anti-development.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, yeah.
It's like in certain ways, in the wrong way, but like literally the alternative is people who more fervently seek development and want to develop the city farther.
How is he anti-development?
There's more red tape. It's hard to build.
He's also anti-density, right? Because like he wants to build. He wants to. I'm sure he does want to build more, but he wants it to be a more spread out suburban.
Yeah,
wealthier.
He wants to sprawl.
You start building up, and that's when the poor people come around.
Ew,
right?
Suburbs are so gross, guys.
Like, and the thing is, like, yeah, guys like Reno and Chris, and I'm sure to an extent Fabio, they're all pro density. And I'm not like personally speaking, I'm not anti density either. I do think that's a good thing, but the way in which they plan on doing it is still going to push poor people out of their homes.
Mm.
It doesn't change the central fact that poor people get fucked and working class people get fucked.
It's like density plus gentrification or suburban sprawl.
Plus
and the sub or the downtown core remains a wasteland.
Yeah, exactly.
And the farmlands get ruined and turned into these ugly suburbs where every house looks so stupid and so the same, and these neighborhoods have no trees.
Yeah,
we're in a climate crisis that should be illegal to like be building more fucking suburbs when we have houses still available, or not, maybe not available, right? But you know, we have abandoned houses in the city.
Houses that were perfectly fine and before they
perfectly
were boarded
fine.
Up.
Yeah, I just
they might
went
not
by,
be now, but they were when they were boarded up. They
I just went by
livable.
A fourplex on the west side, and I was like, "It's boarded up." I'm like, "This is a beautiful fourplex."
Yeah,
gorgeous. It was brick.
Is that the one on College and Felix? I saw one that
I have no idea.
But anyway,
the names.
Yeah, no, like there's all kinds of, and like now a lot of those houses are probably in disrepair and need to be torn down because they've been boarded up for 10 years, and that's what happens, right? Like, you know, just getting, you know, ruined by exposure without being taken care of, right? But at the time they were boarded up, they were literally kicking families out of there who'd been there for decades, who like were like, no, I just put a new fucking roof on this. This house is great, and now I have to leave because Matty Maroon wants to build a bridge. You know, and the city just fucking let him do that.
That should have been a crime. That should have been a crime.
There were counselors against it. And importantly, the Ward 2 counselor is always against it. But at the end of the day, if you get council on your side, they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Sell your home to a fucking billionaire from Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, we need to... We did. I mean, obviously, this I'm assuming I talk for both of you, and this podcast doesn't really give a shit about elections, like at least they're currently constituted in North American society.
Yeah, the way they are now, like
Elections in general, yes, great, cool, but not the ones we have, not bourgeois elections as
exactly.
We have now.
Like, I believe in democracy. I think that's good, but like, I don't think we really have that. I think it's like choose your poison, and I'm just not interested in lesser evilism or splitting hairs. I think if there was something positive to fight for, like, rather than, like, just, like, incremental bullshit that doesn't really do anything and is often coupled with all this other reactionary stuff, like, if there was, like, a socialist or anti-gentrification movement that was propelling forward a candidate and had mass mobilization around it, of course, we'd be going ham for it. Like,
yeah.
Our podcast would just become an outlet, a propaganda tool for that campaign.
Yeah, stay tuned, because 2026 is coming quick.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. But as they stand right now, like, we're not interested in picking a side between the left and right wing of capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we do hope that Drew Dilkins gets whatever is coming to him, whatever that happens to be. Yeah, I would love to see him fall. Again, all the allegations, they're not truths necessarily. But I would get my popcorn out and I would watch that happen. But if we then have this, let's just say by 2025, all this comes out and it does actually take Dilkins down, which I don't believe it will at all. I think he'll be fine. But if that does happen, then we have a by-election between who? Like, Fabio and Fred Francis, and Fred Francis wins.
No,
like it's Kieran.
Kieran and Fred. Or Kieran and Fred Francis. Yeah, you're right. Fabio won't do it. Kieran and Fred Francis, and Fred Francis will win easily, and we just get the Francis to Dilkins to Francis pipeline just over and over again forever. And, like, Francis could be worse. He's not going to be better than Dilkins.
No.
Yeah.
He could be worse.
He's the one wanting panhandling to be banned.
Yeah.
He hates poor people.
Which is the Ward 1 thing, because Dilkins did that exact same thing. Before he was mayor, when he was Ward 1 counselor, he did the exact same thing.
The Ward 1 rich South Windsor people come downtown and they go, ew, I don't want to see this. Let's ban it. That's as much as they're thinking about poverty. They go, I don't want to see it. Ew. It's like, oh, you don't want to see it? Oh, I'm sorry. Does that disrupt your drive over here? You're scared of them? Like, Dilkins is literally frightened by panhandlers. Yeah. I know this because he said this in a interview with... He went to go visit a... Before we had, like... weed shops legal here. He went to what city was
Seattle
it?
Seattle. Like that.
Oh, and he was like, I'm a big guy and I used to like be on the police force or something and I was scared and I was worried about walking through these neighborhoods. And it's like, dude, have you ever walked
like you're a little bitch?
Literally. Also, downtown is like that. Yeah. Like it's not it's weird to be scared literally. Of
it's funny because like we live in Glengarry and I've never been afraid in our neighborhood.
No,
it's like fine. You know, like just I mean, don't.
It's funny too because when you talk to people about what's ruining downtown, you'll inevitably get to the discourse pretty quickly of like, oh, all these poor people are on these crackheads.
Yeah,
you know, it's the fucking landlords who won't let any business operate down here. Mm-hmm. That won't let anybody live down here. Mm-hmm. And then all you get is people who are really, really struggling, and that's all you see because it's been hollowed out deliberately by the ruling class.
Yes.
So like. Yes. You know, I just, again, that we talked about this seems like every episode, but it's like, direct your fucking ire to the proper goddamn thing.
Look up.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop looking down.
Yeah.
The homeless person or the panhandler, they're not the person causing your issue. It's the people that are causing them to be without a home, without services. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Don't blame them.
And it's the people, but it's also just the logic of capitalism.
It's the
logic of capitalism,
yes. It's the system thing. Itself.
Like, we could talk about... Anyway, you guys know what I'm going to say if you listen to the podcast. I'm not going to say it. Fill in the blanks.
Yeah. I mean, like, yes, it is fun to go after individuals who we don't like. That is fun to do. But it is ultimately about this is a system that is set up for those people to thrive. Exactly. You know, until we address that, there's going to be another fucking
Dilkins
waiting.
And the more effective
thing,
instead of cheerleading for Kieran in the next by-election
or in the
going
next election.
For the lesser evil candidate and spending all your energy building that up because you think it's harm reduction, play the long game. Build something that's actually going to, on a systemic level, challenge capitalism. Organize your workplace, organize your apartment building.
Yeah.
You know, build the labor movement. The reason why we have to pick between these shitty candidates and these shitty choices that don't do anything. And the reason we're talking about individuals and not classes is because we have no infrastructure as a class. We have no movement. Build your community. Spend that time reading frickin' Lenin. I don't know. Do something.
Yeah. Or Trajan.
Or Trajan. Well, you should read, okay, if you're going to read Tranchant, you should read Engels first and then Tranchant. Engels on the housing question and then Tranchant in the tenant class. Because
I mean, read Tranchant either way.
Yeah,
read Tranchant either way. Because it's there's loads of Canadian shit in there, which is really what motivates people. Like, oh, this was done already in my neighborhood or in my city.
The Engels is just nice because it's like, oh, when he says that there's no housing.
Yeah.
This guy was saying the same thing in the 1800s.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no housing crisis, here's why.
Yeah, a lot of the same shit that's in Tranchant is also in Engels.
Exactly.
Hey, okay, we gotta wrap it up there, but yeah. Thanks, guys. Let's do this again next week.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, bye.
You're now in the process of defeating the radical level.